Greetings, this is Chris Tilling of Christendom, and today I want to do a little podcast on sin, and especially sin in Paul. I've been thinking about this subject recently, and a number of things have occurred to me, and I thought I'd share them here. Speaking first from a theological perspective, Augustine was really very careful in his analysis of the association between desire and sin in Paul. But this, Pannenberg argues, was really left to the side and relegated to the background in terms of discussion of what sin is, right through till the 20th century. And he writes, I had the quote somewhere. He writes, so if there's a knocking going on in the background, if you can hear that, it's just my fan. But, right, this is what Pannenberg says. The classical significance of Augustine for the Christian doctrine of sin consists in the fact that he viewed and analysed the Pauline link between sin and desire more deeply than Christian theology had hitherto managed to do. Now, I'm quoting this from Thistleton and his commentary, the First Epistle to the Corinthians, and that's no accident, because many New Testament scholars, it's becoming very fashionable to link desire and sin. For example, in 1 Corinthians 10:7, both Thistleton, but also earlier the commentary of Edwards, and the monograph of Watson as well, Paul and the Hermeneutics of Faith, make a big deal of the desire in verse 7 as detrimental and important for all of the lists of following sins. All flow from, I think is Thistleton's way of putting it, the desire mentioned. But also in Romans 1, I did have a quote for Piper as well. I'm not too well prepared tonight, but John Piper wrote of Romans 1:21-23 in an article that sin, at its very centre, was the heart's propensity to value and desire something more than the glory of God. That sin at its very heart was a valuing of something else that isn't God. This isn't only in Romans 1, also Romans 7, you've got in verse 8, Paul says that sin, seizing an opportunity in the commandment, produced in me all kinds of negative desire. Covetousness is the NRSV translation. But the point is established, it's very fashionable amongst scholarship these days to associate sin and desire. I would add, though, that this could be exaggerated. I mentioned 1 Corinthians 10:7, and there is absolutely no syntactical reason to establish the priority of the desire mentioned in verse 7 as determinative for the shape of the following passages. And I'm inclined to think as well, because of the abundance of Pentateuchal narratives that the Apostle is referring to in that section in 1 Corinthians 10, that desire isn't as central as many modern commentators make it out to be. Also in Romans 1, where John Piper mentions desire or valuing, a lot of the language he uses doesn't come from the passage. Desire isn't explicitly mentioned. But even if none of them were, it definitely is in Romans 7:8 and in 1 Corinthians 10:7, even if it's simply not as central to the text as some make it out to be. Now, I'm going to go to the next part of this, but just a little intermission. You're going to relax now and be open to my suggestions. Every time you hear the word sin, you will have an urge to go to the Chris Tilling Really Very Holy Ministers wish list and buy the most expensive book you see. When I snap my fingers, you will remember none of this. On to the next section. I thought that 2 Corinthians 3:18 was a very important verse in relation to this whole complex of issues. It is notoriously difficult to understand. There are so many interpretive possibilities. Just to sort of give a couple of my suggestions. I'm just turning to it now in the text. I think that the glory of the Lord mentioned, I'll just read it out, and all of us with unveiled faces, seeing the glory of the Lord as though reflected in a mirror, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord, the Spirit. Like the NRSV here, I'm suggesting that the best reading is that there is a seeing going on. Other translations will see that differently, but that's at least how I interpret it. And the glory of the Lord, I would suggest, is the Lord here is the Lord Christ. When Paul, in chapter 8 of 2 Corinthians, is talking about the collection, he speaks of the glory of the Lord again, and the glory of Christ a few verses later. I'm inclined to think then that the Lord is the Kyrios Christos. But what is going on here? There seems to be some kind of connection between seeing and transformation. Just to point it out, seeing the glory of the Lord are being transformed into the same image. Now, I've pondered about this in the light of sin being a desire. There is a tradition in the Psalms that a beholding of the glory of the Lord, Yahweh, creates within the beholder tremendous desire and passion for the presence of the Lord and for His glory. I'm thinking especially of Psalm 63. O God, you are my God, I seek you, my soul thirsts for you. Go, so I have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory. Because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. My soul will be satisfied with the richest of foods. And he goes on, my soul cling to you in the watches of the night. And in 84, I think, is it? Psalm 84. How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts. And goes on to speak of the presence of the Lord is his greatest desire. Now, what has all this got to do with 2 Corinthians 3:18? I think there's a clue here to help us understand what is going on. There seems to be an understanding, a Jewish tradition, that a beholding of the Lord and His glory provokes desire for the Lord and His presence and His glory. There's a transformation that happens at the level of desire. Now, what I would suggest, then, is this is how we can understand what is going on in 2 Corinthians 3:18, at least to a certain extent, that there is an association between seeing and transformation. Paul seems to be suggesting that by beholding the glory of the Lord, their desires will perhaps be transformed. Paul uses many terms for metaphors and images for explaining transformation that happens, the new creation, renewal in the inner man, and so on and so on. But if sin is so centered on what you desire, then it would surely follow that transformation is centered on a transformation of desires. And just like in the psalmic traditions, in 2 Corinthians 3:18, there is a hint that by beholding the glory of the Lord, the desires are transformed. And this, of course, bears out to wider passages in Paul, in just a couple of chapters after 2 Corinthians 3:18 and 5, in verse 8, he speaks of preferring to be with the Lord. And of course this reaches explicit and passionate proclamation in Philippians 1 and 3. But also 1 Thessalonians, you've got Paul's ultimate desire explained in 4:17, I think it is, so we shall always be with him, with the Lord, and the same in 5:9 or 10, that the ultimate desire of the apostle was the presence of the risen Lord. Transformation had happened at the level of desires. Possibly 2 Corinthians 3:18, which is what I'm suggesting here tonight, is central to this process, that believers, by beholding, by seeing the glory of the risen Lord, are transformed from one degree of glory to another. This has huge pastoral implications as well as theological, I think, in terms of exegesis of Paul. But they have been ably dealt with, I think, in John Piper's work. I forget what it's called now. Big, thick book. Anyway, I hope that's been helpful, and I wish you all a pleasant evening. Good night.